the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, two fine basketball coaches, undefeated for a number of years, just talking ball and talking past experiences at D-Squared. To me, this week, even though it's not October 15th, and I'm used to October 15th, I got to be honest with you, but this week, the first week of practice, you know, you're talking about getting a chance to be with your team in a normal practice, not an individual workout. And I know the coaches have access to guys all year round, but that first practice, when you line them up on the baseline and you look them in the eye and you kind of create a vision for what your season wants to look, what you want your season to look like, that first day, how good is that first day of practice?
Seth, it's good. It's great as a coach. Now, I played for Coach Knight, and this is a true story. First day of practice used to be, you know, we didn't have a player's program. You know, it was a coach's program that you did what the hell he said. My first day of practice, Seth, I swear to God, I was going to die. Not kind of die. Not, you know, that, oh, man, I'm going to die. No, physically drop dead and die. I look at my friend who is one of my roommates and he's the manager, and I go, hey Foxy, how much more we got? He kind of sneaks a look at his watch and says, well, you've been going 45 minutes, you got 2 hours and 15 left. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna die. But times have changed. Now we're kinder, we're gentler, and as a coach, it is so great to have your team together. And now we're going, now we're focused, season starts earlier, let's do this. But back in the day, I remember my parents came. They wanted to go to the football game. I said, are you out of your mind? I'm laying here in bed. I'm not moving. Oh, man, I love first day of practice.
I'll tell you, my college coach, Alabama, who actually was Coach Knight's assistant, yes, at Army, my first practice ever as a player, 13 chairs lined up at the foul line. We're sitting there. The assistant coach tells us to sit down. We're sitting there. We're waiting. 5 minutes goes by. 10 minutes goes by. The old man comes out from behind the stage, because Fairleigh Dickinson, we didn't have actually an arena. It was a court with a stage, and the old man comes in. He's wearing purple pants, a light blue shirt, chewing on a cigar, one strand of hair wrapped around his head about 4,000 times with a pound of hairspray, and he walks up and goes, hey, I'm your coach, Al Lowe. Like, we didn't know he was our coach. All right, he goes, I want you to like me, not to love me, because loving leads to screwing, and no one screws with Alabama. Now, he didn't say screw, you know.
Right.
But I know one thing. We had white shorts in practice, and I think they were soiled, because I mean, I about lost it. But I loved practice. I mean, Seth, that was the best.
I looked at my practice jersey, and it was 7,000 sizes too big, and it had the number 54 on it. It was Kent Benson's practice jersey, and it literally came down to my knees, and I'm like, damn, I better play hard enough to at least get my own damn practice jersey, because Coach Knight, he didn't care, man. He put you on scholarship. He recruited you, but once he got you, you were in his army, and you were starting at the bottom having to work your way out. You know what stinks? I always said this to players, Seth. I always said, playing for me, you're going to have the greatest stories ever. You're going to have stories. You know, so now it's a kinder, gentler, blah, 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 blah. You know, we got to be nice to players, and we got, it's a players program and all that happy horse bleep. And so they're going to miss out on stories like this. They need stories. Everybody has stories.
Well, you know, there's probably every year you have a guy that can do you better than you do yourself.
Oh, Coach Knight caught me doing him one day in the locker room. He caught me, and I'm up in front of the team, and he sits in the back. He goes, no, Dan, keep going. So I'm like, all right. So I kept going, and he's rolling, literally rolling on the ground laughing, and then I MF'd him to end the discussion, and I went and sat down and hoped I didn't get killed.
I tell you, I miss practice as a former coach. I probably miss this first 3 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks of practice more, because, you know, to me, like, what coaches are trying to do is try to figure out who they are and how they win. Coaches are trying to figure out, you know, what guys have really kind of bought in and understand, what freshmen understand how to play hard, what guys can listen and process. And then your upperclassmen, you know, you're trying to figure out, all right, which one of those guys are the leaders? Which one of those guys are going to coach the freshmen? Which one of those guys are going to set the example? Which one of those guys in the locker room are going to coach the locker room so that when you come out of that first practice where you, you know, 45 minutes in, you think it's, you're exhausted, they can explain to the freshmen, hey, this is what it's going to take for us to be successful. All right. You got to embrace the grind. I always thought that first 2 weeks, you really learned a lot about the personality of your team by how the freshmen acclimated, how the upperclassmen embraced the freshmen, and how, you know, guys learned how to work hard and work together.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's funny, because in practice, you got to do it every day, you know. You're not doing three-day-a-week workouts, so you got to do it every day with a day off somewhere in the middle, so you see who can work. You know, I had an interesting conversation one time with the great Bill Polian, and we were talking about players. He actually just called into my show to talk about this. He said, you know, how soon did you know whether a player could play or not? You know, from high school to college. I said, well, in about 5 minutes. I said, in about 5 minutes, I could tell you how much the kid's going to help or not help, how quickly. And he's like, that's absolutely right. He was talking about a kid named Gerard Powers they drafted. He said, within 3 minutes of practice, we knew that this kid was going to be our starting cornerback. And you know what? The kid ended up having a, you know, really good career for a while, and he got hurt. But that's you get under a different kind of pressure, and your teammates, you know, if you do things a certain way, and this is the way I was brought up to do it, and I'm sure you were too, you got to compete in practice. It's not, yep. Hey, look, the thing people always ask me about how I coached or how, you know, Coach Knight, is every practice mattered. If you didn't have a good practice, somebody would get on a red shirt, which was the first team. And you know what? That's this time of year, and that's part of the fun of being a coach is setting an environment where you got to compete. The world's about competing, and that's what this time is.
And it's funny because, look, I'm not against workout guys. There are some really good workout guys. I have a former guy that was a graduate assistant for me, Rob McClanahan, who works guys out in the NBA, works out Steph Curry. He's really good. But there's a difference between being a workout player and being a winning basketball player. And, like, you can do all the drills you want and all the skill work you want. No. That doesn't make you ready to compete and fight and draw a line in the sand. And you could be the greatest guy, you know, on step shooting, coming off screens,
yeah.
Dribble moves, even some concept stuff. But that doesn't make you a competitor.
And hey, let me ask
you. You got to be a competitor.
You're a basketball historian and just a basketball guy. Name me three Indiana basketball players that you think at IU were great.
Well, I thought May was great. I thought Buckner was great. I thought Benson was really good. Yeah. I liked Wilkerson too.
Yeah,
I thought Wilkerson was amazing.
Yeah, none of them. I don't Isaiah. None of them were good one on nobody.
I didn't even use Isaiah.
You're right. So none of them were as good as Magnus Pelkowski one on nobody. Magnus Pelkowski, who nobody's ever heard of, was the greatest one-on-nobody player in the history of Indiana University basketball. One-on-nobody, my man could run. He was from Columbia. Run and jump, touch the top of the backboard, shoot, dribble, cross you over, dunk on your right hand, left-handed, reverse, doesn't matter. Couldn't play a lick when he got in the game. Not a lick. The greatest one. I don't care who you name. Everybody's got that grew up playing baseball. A 3 o'clock hitter, but the game's at 7. Everybody's got to coach basketball. The greatest practice player ever at 3 o'clock, but the game's at 7. Everybody's got those guys. Everybody.
I just, you know, you did. What's my man's name again?
Magnus Pelkowski.
Magnus Pelkowski. He just became more famous than, like, he was maybe in his whole career. Because Magnus, I should have thrown Isaiah out right from the beginning. But
yeah,
again, I followed him in basketball.
Yeah.
But you know what? I have no Magnus in my memory bank.
I know. And he's the greatest guy ever. Smart guy. I'm sure he's making millions of dollars. His family owned a big toy company. But I'm just telling you, everybody's got those guys. And until you go play, until you scrimmage, until you compete day after day after day after day, you know what? Those guys get eliminated. And they're fine for practice, but they get eliminated eventually. They just do.
How about the coaches right now trying to figure out their teams? Like, if you have your team back, like last year, Carolina, they knew who they were. Year before, Villanova, who knew who they were. Duke, Kentucky. Right now, they're trying to figure themselves out.
You know,
how much has that changed in relation to that? Or just saying, I'm a system coach. We're going to kind of tweak the system, but we're going to stick to our system.
Well, let me go two ways with you on that. It changes because of, you know, guys leaving. It, not only leaving to go to the NBA, but leaving to transfer. I go back to this, and I don't – would you ever do this? Because, all right, you got a team like Carolina last year, a lot of veterans. I hate to use Indiana as a reference, but I always thought this is so interesting. All right, would you ever do this? You got a veteran team back. Coach Knight told his team, told Buckner, told Wilkerson in 1976, if you don't go undefeated and win national championship, this year has been a failure. He told them that in the first practice. Now, the game has changed such that you don't, you know, Buckner senior, May senior, all these guys are seniors, right? Well, you can't really do that now, can you? Or can you? What are your thoughts?
No, you can't. You can't do that. Here's the thing. Could you do it with – no, you can't. First of all, there's a different parity. There's more players. They're spread out a little bit more. No, because you don't know who your team is.
Right.
I mean, like, here's the thing. I mean, like, teams change. I mean, look, Marvin Bagley shows up at Duke.
Right.
You know, the first week of classes. That changes their team. Hell, that changes Marquise Bolden's role probably. I mean, just – you know, can they play those three big guys together? I don't think so. I mean, if you look at Mike's career, he's always played one big and a skilled four and, you know, and had skilled players. And now looks like they're going to have to play two bigs, and he's talking about playing three bigs. If you draw Calipari, I mean, you had Vanderbilt, who's really good, by the way. He goes down injured even before his season starts. You know, he's got a totally different team. He doesn't have anyone to throw the ball into really on the block, and he's got a bunch of 6'9" guys that are really good. Doesn't have a dominating point guard like he had in Fox and Monk, and you know he's going to have to change his system. So, but then you got Carolina, you got Villanova, you know you've got, I would say Gonzaga. You got some guys that, you know what, they're true to their systems because maybe they have guys that have been in their program longer and they stay older, like Mike Bray, say.
Yeah, I mean, I go back, you know, we all go back to our own experiences. I mean, I had a kid, my best player, leave August 9th, transferred to Ohio State. It's just so hard. But now you're going, now you know, you're getting ready for a scrimmage, you're getting ready. And the thing that I like about early season tournaments is, you know, I know it doesn't sustain itself most times, although maybe this year it will because leagues are playing earlier in the season in December, at least the Big Ten is. But I like the fact that there are a lot of teams that are going to play an exhibition, maybe play a game here or there, but then they're going to test themselves in really good games. And you know what? I have always said this. Players want to play in big games. Coaches want to win so they can eat pizza and feel good about the night. You know what I mean? Smoke a cigar, have a glass of wine, and relax for a day. But players want to play big-time games. And you know what? I think college coaches are starting to understand that, and they're starting to schedule better. I think. At least I hope.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And even the best of the best. Because the other thing is because more teams get an NCAA tournament. So you can get bopped a couple of times, find out more about your team, and play different stuff. Like I always thought, playing different styles early in the season helps you for league play.
Yeah.
Like, you know, play against a good zone team. Play against a Princeton-esque type team. Play against a team that's going to press. You know, you're going to learn about yourself. But let's flip it because we got a bunch to do. The FBI investigation, everything that's going on. If you're a high school senior, you're a really good player. Do you sign a letter of intent? Do you make a commitment? Are those schools that have been named, do they have no chance whatsoever right now in this moment in time signing anyone early? What's your thoughts?
Well, you just saw the kid Flip sign with North Carolina yesterday. He was considering, you know, Arizona, or was going to go to Arizona. You saw that. Seth, if my son was a really good player, if my son's Marvin Bagley or whatever, there's no way I'm signing a letter of intent. I'm sitting waiting and seeing a couple of things. If I'm a really, really good player, I'm looking at two things. I'm looking at number one, the schools that I'm interested in, are they going to be investigated? And I would look the coach dead in the eye when he's talking. I don't care what coaches say. I want to look at them. Number two, I don't know what's going to happen with the NBA rule of the one and done. That thing may get changed this year. That may get changed next year. I'm sitting. I am waiting because I don't want my son going to a place where they could have not only an NCAA issue, but they could have an FBI issue. I just don't want it. So I think it has already affected the landscape of college basketball recruiting, and I think it will continue to, don't you?
Yeah, well, I no doubt about it. I think it would be impossible for any of those schools mentioned to sign. And yet Nasir Little, who I had with me in Europe last year in Italy, great kid, plays hard, shoots it better than people think, really can defend. He's a perfect Carolina player. Said he always loved Carolina, you know, obviously in his commitment, but – I mean, it's not like there's still some variables going on in the Carolina situation as well.
Well,
because that case still hasn't been resolved. Right. So, I mean, you know, like the landscape of our game right now, if I was a big time prospect, I would have to think you're going to let this thing play itself out. You might make a commitment, but you're surely not going to sign anything. And which is going to, you know, because, you know, let's face it, you sign with a school, but you sign with a head coach. And you want to make sure, and that's why I think the NCAA should, if a coach leaves, letter of intents are void, the kids that sign them should have to meet with the new coach coming in, but then they should be allowed to pursue their degree wherever they would want in their career, whatever they want, because in the end, we all know the kids, they pick play for a head coach, they don't pick actually the institution as much. Don't you agree?
No, I totally agree. I think two things. I think that should be automatic, and I think the school should pay for kids' cell phones and their iPads. Those are two things that I would do in a second. Let me ask you a question about this whole thing. I've been very disappointed in the leadership of college basketball, and people say, who's the leader? Well, the coaches are the leaders. You've got guys shocked. You've got guys that say it should be a new model. You've got guys surprised. All right. Well, where are the guys condemning the cheating? Where are the leadership in college basketball, the coaches that are saying, hey, look, this should not be tolerated? Where are those guys? Where are the people standing up? Other than there have been some coaches, but where's our big-time coaches condemning the fact that cheating has gotten to the point where the NCAA is taken out of it and the FBI comes in and there's arrest? I've been incredibly disappointed because, as you well know, Coach, when we are coaching, think that our opinion matters on everything, and we discuss everything. Hell, the guys in North Carolina were very vocal on where people – you know, the bathroom law, where they go to the bathroom, but nobody's going to talk about college basketball. I'm disappointed in the big time leadership coaches in college basketball. I just am.
You know, it's kind of interesting to say that because yesterday I listened to Mike Krzyzewski's interview, and he was talking about how, you know, we need a leader and we need to, you know, conduct it like a $1 billion business, and you know, we need to approach it differently, and we don't have a good model, but he never addressed the actual issue.
Right.
And, you know, to me, it's twofold because what's gone on in college basketball, whether it was in a paper bag or it was wire transfers, has been going on for a long time. It's become now a little bit more corporate. The selling of players, your own players, the guys that, you know, basically entrusted their careers to you, to money managers and agents, that to me is the one that just kills me. And I think everyone's sitting back and trying to look and see what's going on. And I think that everyone's trying to find a solution to the crisis instead of saying, well, wait a second, you know, why are we making excuses? Well, you know, it's a $1 billion business. So is that a reason? Until I argue this with guys all the time. Look, you sign up to be a member of the NCAA, all right? And the rules are made by the presidents and the faculty reps. you might agree with him or disagree with him. And if you disagree with him, I respect your opinion. That's someone's right to have an opinion on it. But as long as the rules are the rules, it is your obligation to abide by the rules. That's just the way it is. No different than, you know what? You know, you get pulled over and you're going 75 and 55 and you think, well, you know what? I don't think it should be 55. I think it should be 72, right? And I was only going 75. So you know what? I should have been. No, until the rules change to 75, you're speeding. So, I mean, to me, that's the one thing that, in a lot of ways, I think some people are making excuses because they don't agree with the rule, as opposed to saying that, you know what, the rule might be bad, but in the end, it's your obligation until it's changed to abide by the bylaws and have the thing set up. Because I've seen articles from attorneys. I've seen and I'm not talking about our attorneys. I'm talking about attorneys from national attorneys and magazines. And, look, that stuff's online every day. But all it is make an excuse. You can't use the excuse that the rule is bad, because it is the rule. All right. If the rule is bad, to take the time to change the rule. But until it's changed, you know, it's your obligation to abide by the rule. That's just kind of my take on the thing.
Can you imagine if it was like golf, where you called your own penalties on yourself? I mean, bottom line is, don't hire guys that are clowns. Don't hire idiots. Don't disregard. Don't have blatant disregard for, as you said, the rules in place. And when you do, I think it's incumbent on the NABC. Where have they been? The guardians of the game. Where the hell have they been? Where the hell are the big time coaches? I'll probably end up, ostracized, but I don't care. I think it's more important for coaches to come out and straighten out their own business than it is for me to get access to a coach before a game. I don't care about talking to a coach before a game. It's just been incredibly surprising, but it's been disappointing that our quote-unquote Hall of Famers, our leaders, haven't done jack, have made excuses, as you said, have criticized the model, have had amnesia. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
No, I agree with that. The one thing, the one thing I would say, even, and I'm not making excuses for the people who've done things wrong, even good people do really stupid things.
Sure.
So, I'm sure there are going to be some really good people that made really bad decisions, and it's going to impact them and their families and everyone around them. And to me, I'm an empathetic guy. Do I condone it? No, but I have empathy for, just the impact that this is going to have on so many. It hurts.
See, I don't. I go the other way. I go the other way, and I know I'm wrong about this, and it's very personal to me. I left West Virginia for a reason. I watched what happened in Indiana. It's very personal to me, and I make no bones about it, and I don't have any empathy for any of them. I mean, people know the rules. They're ingrained in your head. The compliance department is an industry unto itself. So you knowingly do it. And again, I just think, for all these guys that talk about every single freaking thing in our society like they're Lord God because they win some basketball games, to remain silent or to complain and moan about the system, as opposed to saying, hey, I'm condemning this, we're, blah, blah, blah. It's very telling to me, and it's not telling in a good way, because, I don't care if any coach doesn't like me. I don't care. I think it's more important that this game in the public view gets straightened out, because it's not every kid. It's not every coach. But right now, it looks like it is, and we're not seeing anything from, my opinion. Great coaches in this industry don't want a leader. They don't want somebody. They say they do. They want a, they don't want a commissioner because they got it good. Who's ruling over Krzyzewski? Who's ruling over, who's saying anything to Cal Perry? These guys love not having. I love not having a boss. Everybody does. So it this whole thing sickens me. It just absolutely sickens me.
Thank you, D Squared. And we'll be back in a moment with our good friend, the head Bearcat, Mick Cronin. Dan Dockage and I would like to welcome in our guy, the Cincinnati Bearcat head coach. Incredible job he's done. If I'm not mistaken, 8 straight NCAA tournament appearances, has maybe one of his best teams ever. The
kinder and gentler, Mick Cronin. Coach Cronin, good morning, and how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Well, besides being technically challenged, I think Dokic and I we're hanging in there. What do you think, D squared?
Mick, as a fired coach, there's never a bad day, baby. There's every night is Friday night, and every day is Saturday, my friend. So we are. Rolling. Hey, Mick, kinder and gentler. You know, let me ask you off the bat here. You know, you had the health scare a few years ago. Did that change it? Did that change your approach to life, kids, players, that kind of thing?
You want me to lie?
Yes. Tell us what sure, recruits Dan, need to I, hear.
You know, my outlook on life is so very different. You know, you just play the games and you're happy to be coaching. not really. In all seriousness, you know, anybody's had a health scare. If you worry about things like money and inconsequential things that really don't give you any happiness, you've really wasted your wake-up scare. You know, you just so – the ability to coach basketball, you know, the fact that I get to coach is something I appreciate. You know, I'm not a guy who walks around saying that I've been to this many NCAA tournaments, they're lucky they have me as the coach. I'm well aware there's plenty of guys out there to coach basketball, especially if they got good players. It's pretty easy if you got good players. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I smell the coffee and – I tell you one thing, I make sure I spend a lot of time with my daughter because, as you guys know, they disappear once and you become an ATM machine once they get to be a teenager. So she turns 11 tomorrow, so I'm getting all my time in now.
Hey, you're an ATM machine when they're teenagers, when they're 20, when they're 30. It makes no difference.
Comes right out of my mouth. I just spit it out every morning. Just
Hey, Mick, it's been a crazy couple of weeks in college basketball. You've been around this thing for absolutely forever. When you first heard of this whole FBI investigation sting and everything else, what was the first thing that came to your mind?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, it's just when you live in the field, we because I know everybody gets tagged, you know, so, you know, for us in the game, we all know, hey, look, just like the banking industry, people make mistakes, okay? In every industry, even if people involve, let's say they are guilty, okay? It doesn't mean they were doing it forever. Maybe they got caught up in something and made a mistake. It makes us all look like that. You know, it's just not good. And most importantly, how about all the players out here? Okay, every player's family is not on the take. So you know how many players are in Division I basketball? I mean, you got 340-something teams with 13 guys on scholarship at every team. So, you know, you do your quick math. I mean, there's thousands of kids. And 99% of them were recruited the right way and are getting their education, are graduating at a high rate. I know at Cincinnati, 86% of our student athletes, if 570-something student athletes in all sports graduate. So it's just not a good look for college sports, because the person out there that's the passive fan, he looks at it or she looks at it and say, you know, college athletics is whatever. You know, it's just not good. So it's sad, and the timing's awful with our season starting.
You know, go ahead, Dan.
Well, hey, Mick, I want to talk to you about your schedule. You, speaking of the season starting, you know, a lot of guys go one way with the schedule. A lot of guys go another way. You go the hard way. Why? What's your philosophy scheduling folks like UCLA, Florida, that type of thing?
Well, and I think my contract helps, Doc. My contract helps, though. I try to keep it real, man. You know, you better have a good contract. You start scheduling UCLA and Florida, and you got Xavier. Shoot, hopefully, we if we can make the finals in the Cayman Islands, we'll probably run into Iowa, who's – you do the Big Ten. You know, they're a sleeper nationally. They got everybody but one player back. So I think being in the American, maybe versus the Big East, you know, the old days of the Big East, man, you know, you play three ranked teams a week and you can only take so much of a beating. But I also think that the landscape, I try to keep my pulse on what's going on. And I think there's just a cry nationally from the fan bases of everybody's team that they want more games of interest in the early season. But I don't know if it's the right move, to be honest with you guys. I'd like to know what you think, because last year my team's 9 in Jerry Palm's RPI. We're 12 in the NCAA's RPI, and we're a 6 seed. So I don't, you know, so you say, well, okay, it's going to help your RPI. Well, I mean, we were 9-12 in the RPI last year and got a 6 seed. So some of that stuff's perception, who's on a committee. You know, they can use any metric they want. You know, for one team, they say it matters. The other team, they say it doesn't matter. Then they say, well, top 100 wins. Well, what's a top 50 win off the RPI? So it does matter. But so I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we're doing the right thing. I know my players are excited about playing those games. And, again, it goes back to them. So I think hopefully we got the team that can handle it.
How different is it? Like, you know, like you talk about the old Big East. Now you're in the American, which obviously is the old Conference USA in a lot of ways. How different does it impact recruiting, scheduling? Look, you've got your team right now. I think you're a top 10 team. I mean, Gary Clark is absolutely a killer, in my opinion, maybe one of the best rebounders in the country. You got Kyle Washington. Yeah, probably the big question is how do you replace Troy Copain? But how do you run your program differently now in the new American Conference in relation to back in the Big East days?
Well, I think scheduling, you got to, that's like what Dan was talking about, marquee opponents. You have to make sure that, like a Gonzaga, you know, I'm sure if Mark Few was on this, and this was a conference call, he'd tell you, you got to be able to make sure you're playing marquee opponents. Now, our league is much better, obviously, than Gonzaga's, but you still don't have necessarily the ACC's schedule. So, depending where Connecticut's at this year, it's a great ad for us with Wichita State, because you're playing a top 25 team this year, a top 10 team. I think players, as you know, in recruiting, coach, you went from Long Beach State to South Florida with Virginia Tech. When you were at Virginia Tech, you could sell, come to our league, we're playing in the ACC. You know, so our thing is, hey, you come to our league, we're the, you know, right now we're one of the big fish, but we're also, you're playing to win the league, where, you know, some places you're not playing to win the league. You're playing to finish 7th in the league. You still could go to the Final Four, but you're finishing 7th in the league. So, but kids want to play in marquee games. I mean, that's just, that's a recruiting thing. It's not just your fan base. It's definitely a recruiting tactic to make sure that you're playing some of those teams. And it's hard to get those games. I'm extremely appreciative of UCLA and Steve Alford for that home and home. It's not lost on anybody that in our fan base, we've never played them in the regular season. So there are going to be a lot of people traveling west for that game.
How do you replace Troy Copain?
Not easy. You know, we got good point guards with us. Kane Boone transfer. Justin Jennifer is going to be a junior. And we're a development program. So, our guys get better and they'll step up. And Justin will be much better this year. Kane sat out last year. But still, as you guys know this, the end of the game, you know, the average margin of victory in like opponents and like conferences is around 5-6 points a game. So somebody's got to have the ball in the last 2 minutes. And for the last 3 years, we've had one guy with the ball, Troy Copain. And he was a low turnover guy, second in the nation to Monty Morris for 2 years in that department. He won a lot of games. And when I say that, you know, you guys know what I mean. But late game, making sure you get things done the way you need to get them done. So that'll be our biggest challenge. You know, no doubt about it. Making sure, you know, who's going to have the ball, late game situations, and who's going to make sure we're organized defensively, late game situations with him not out there. You know, I think Jacob Evans is a guy that's going to really step up for us in those situations.
Coach, you know, Seth mentioned top 10 team. Most people are going to have you in the top 10. Do you talk about that? And what do you think of your team? You mentioned certain players and what you have to do, but you've been with them. You've seen them. You practiced with them. You saw them in the summer. What do you think about your team?
Oh, we stink.
Right. Can't win a game.
I mean, you know, I mean, are you kidding?
Yeah.
We just started practice. Nobody plays. You know, we can't guard the ball. Our deflection totals are low. I mean, you know, our help is late. We're fouling too much. You know, right now, you know, as a coach, I think the worst thing you could do is start believing in that stuff. I mean, you know, I don't want to go – Nick Saban is somebody – you know, I like studying coaches, so I pay attention to him. And so I don't want to go Nick Saban on you, you know, but right now nobody knows who's any good, you know, and it is a process, and you just got to worry about having a good practice today. I think if you get away, and I'm going to tell you, Dan, where I learned that, you know, when I took this job and I was 34 years old in the Big East with, I don't know, 5-6 Hall of Fame coaches, that, at least there are that would have been now. And one scholarship player, you had to learn not to think about the big picture, or it would have been overwhelming. You had to just worry about have a good practice today. I remember we opened the league 1 year, 0-2, and you know, the question was, you know, well, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to try to make sure we have a really good practice and get better and build on the things we need to do to win a game. And I think if you get away from that, you're as the leader, boy, you better not get away from that. Because as you know, with social media and all this stuff going on, kids read all that stuff. So you got to be the one that makes sure that they just stay focused on today. So our guys, when they hear my voice, they don't think we're very good right now.
Right. That's what fans don't understand. Fans, and this is why I asked you the question, because fans think, oh, they're a top 10 team. They show up at practice, you know, kind of just waiting to get to the games. But, you know, is there a time in your you know, you've coached a while now. You've had really good teams. When do you usually know, like, all right, this team is really good? We're not, you know, at what point in the season do you personally sit down and say, all right, I kind of know who my team is right now. I know where we're at, good or bad.
I think you got to play some quality opponents. And that goes like Tom Izzo is a guy, you know, again, covering the Big Ten, always plays some tough teams early. And I've read his comments. It tells you the truth. You know, you really don't know the truth. How do you know the truth until you place, you know, it's like a boxer. You know, you can carry him and get his career started until he walks in the ring against somebody really good. I mean, you got to get in the ring against somebody as good as you, or maybe better than you. And then two or three of them probably. And then find out what you're made of. Because then you find out, okay, here's where we got to get better to win our conference, to compete for our conference. So I think sometime, you know, to really answer your question, after you play those teams, so it's probably going to be closer to Christmas where you're going to know, okay, you know, here's what we're good at. And usually, you know, you go in as a coach with a certain way you think you're going to have to win games to be good, be, you know, whether it's man, zone, you know, get the ball inside or get the ball to this guy or that guy. And then after you play those games, then you find out, okay, maybe I was right about that. We got to adjust here. You know, what do we got to do? Because some of that stuff didn't work against the best teams. And that's really who you got to practice to beat, because you're not going anywhere unless you can beat those teams. So I think that's, again, with this being able to schedule those type of teams early, you're going to find out how good you are and, most importantly, what you got to improve at.
How about like scrimmages versus exhibitions? You guys go to scrimmage route. Obviously, you can't say who you're scrimmaging against. Or I know that's legal.
Yeah, we scrimmaged last year, Seth. We scrimmaged last year, and I tell you what, I'm big on this. Like, we call fouls in practice, and if you look at us statistically in the last 5-6 years, we're in the top 10 or top 15 in the nation in fewest fouls. And I just think the ways to give up baskets, layups, free throws, and wide open threes to good shooters. Percentage wise, that's what you're trying to get on offense. That's what you're trying to not give up on defense. So we scrimmaged and we really didn't shoot the bonus and we didn't count fouls, and it wasn't real to me. It just wasn't realistic because it was just a foul fest. And you know, I look at that a little bit different. This year we're not scrimmaging, so we're actually playing a road game because of our arena situation. We're playing at Bellarmine, who you guys both know, Scott Davenport, but in my mind, the best coach in the country that nobody knows. And they're incredibly tough team to defend. They shoot over 53% from the field every year, and they've got five guys can shoot the ball. So we're down in Louisville playing Bellarmine this year. So it'll be a great game for us.
How about playing on the road? I mean, basically, you have no home court on campus advantage this year. All right, they're renovating the Shoe, which is obviously going to be huge moving forward, but how different will that be, and you know, what kind of things do you have in place to be able to get back down to where you're going to be playing so the kids can feel like it's their home court?
Well, the good thing is our season ticket sales are at like a 12-year high, and we're less than 1,000 tickets away from selling out the entire season. And that's at BB&T Arena, which is on Northern Kentucky's campus, 7 miles from our campus. So there's a lot of people that don't play on campus. We'll turn that arena into our arena this year, and we're going to make it our home. And, you know, I'm a no-excuse guy, so, you know, I think it shouldn't matter where we're playing. Now, you know, some players are quirky over time. You know, some are – like my guy Kyle Washington, he befriended the Northern Kentucky players, and he was over there as much as he could get over there this summer. And I asked him if the rims were any different. Were they higher, lower? I mean, did and he looked me dead in the eye. I said, "Oh yeah, coach, they're different." You know, so hey, if that's what whatever it makes him happy. If he thinks we need to go, whatever makes everybody comfortable. You know, players are different. They have their different opinions on things. And I you know, you got some coaches. Maybe don't believe in this, but I think, hey, if they feel we need to shoot over there a little more, we will. But obviously, we have our own practice facility while they're rebuilding our arena. So we don't practice in our arena anyway. Like, we practice in our practice facility. Even when our arena is rebuilt and it's one of the best in the nation, we're still going to practice below it in our practice facility. But Kyle Washington is a guy that goes up every day after practice. He would go up to our arena and shoot for 20 minutes every day. So I got to make sure we drive him over to Northern Kentucky as much as he wants.
It is going to be like one of the great stories. Northwestern is doing the same thing. I think they're playing at the
Rosemont,
I can't remember.
Right?
Rosemont.
I think they're playing out at the airport. Yeah.
Do you talk to Chris about it? Do you guys, like, hey, this is a unique – they did it way back, but this is a unique situation. This could be – this is a cool story. Because
Villanova's doing it. They're playing at Wells Fargo because they're redoing the pavilion.
There it is.
Northern
Kentucky,
wish
Chris luck, because I've played at Rosemont and the Reverse.
Oh, me too.
That place is cold.
It's cold out there, man. You know, BB&T Arena in Northern Kentucky is brand new, so it's a great place, and we're going to have it sold out. So, you know, it'll be different, but I think, you know, after we play a couple of games, it'll become the norm for our guys, I would think. You know, who knows? It's the unknown. I think my job, Dan, is coach, you got to embrace it and make sure, you know, embrace it. And like I've told our guys, hey, our games are all going to be sold out. Every game's going to be sold out before we even tip it off. So, you know, I'm going to sell it to our guys as it's an advantage, you know, because the other teams are like, what do you mean? We play Cincinnati. Why is the game in Kentucky? You know, I'm going to tell our guys, the other teams, they're not even going to know where the heck they're at.
So it does change your routine a little bit, though, right? Will you go down there for shoot around, or are you just going to shoot around at the practice facility?
I had the advantage of coaching at Louisville, as you guys know, 2001-2002. We played at Freedom Hall. So we never shot at Freedom Hall. But what Kevin Willard and I have figured out with the guy, you know, some of the guys like Reese Gaines was a great player. He's a good friend of mine now. He's a college coach. They wanted to get over there. So we'll get to the arena early. So if the game's at 7, we'll get there at 5. And the guys that like to go through a shooting routine on the, we'll do that with them. But during the day, you got class. I mean, you know, you're not going to have shoot around, and then where are you going to go in between? You're going to go, you know, you're going to go back to campus. So No, to answer your question, our pre-game stuff, if you have a night game, you know, our guys come straight from class to do our, you know, our practice stuff in our practice gym. So we'll get the shooting in around 5 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game.
You know, would you expound on this? Because it drives me nuts, Coach, when people say, oh, they're not student-athletes. You just mentioned class. Would you explain to the listeners of this unbelievably great podcast how kids actually do go to class? I mean, class is a consideration. Yes. It drives me nuts. It does.
Well, you know, because your son, is he getting his master's?
Yeah.
Your son has played at Michigan? Again, we talked about this. This is what drives me nuts. And some of it, I have a bone to pick with your station. Because I say this to Jay Billis, who's a friend of mine. I say, if we spend all our time just talking about the guys going to the NBA, then that's what people, their connotation with college basketball becomes that. And those guys aren't graduating. They're really on campus for less than a year. But that's 1%, not even 1% of the kids playing college basketball. The kids play, the 99% of the guys playing college basketball are playing 4 years, some of them 5 years, some of them are getting multiple degrees. So it doesn't represent the truth of what's going on out there. You know, we've graduated. I can't remember the last time a guy didn't graduate for us at Cincinnati, and we have two seniors this year. And they could have graduated this summer if they wanted to, Gary Clark and Kyle Washington. They've just elongated it because they know they have to be enrolled during the season this year. But they're easily graduating. I mean, they're walking as easy as you could walk. And then we have three juniors next year. They're in the same boat. They will all graduate easy, Justin, Jennifer, Kane Broom, and Jacob Evans. So you don't do that if you don't go to class. So you know, I think it's perpetuated, though, but everybody's so caught up when you watch college basketball with who's going pro. And the talk is, he's a pro. Well, hold on a minute. You know, it starts when they're in high school. You know, and that's where the problems start with the agents and the runners, and that's why we have going on what we have going on right now. But it's not indicative of the 99% of the kids that are playing college basketball.
So, you know, that's an interesting point, Mick, because we're talking about totally revamping all of college sports and college basketball and everything that's gone on, obviously, the last 2 weeks. And really, we're talking about, you know, people talk about one percenters. It's 0.1%.
Yeah.
We're talking about, like, literally taking a brush across the landscape of college basketball. And really, the landscape of college basketball is very different than, I think, the players and the people that we're talking about. Does that make sense?
100%. But again, in defense of the public opinion, they only know what they're fed. They only know what they read in headlines. People don't really know. I mean, outside of the circle of people within our game or within college athletics, it either played it and coached it, you know, like all three of us. The casual fan, they know headlines. They don't even read the story. They just know headlines, and they're getting on with their life. So if the headlines are always about some guy going pro and so one and done, and this, they think everybody's one and done. I mean, they don't really know. I mean, just think about how we just read headlines about other things in the world that we really don't know about. We just read headlines about it. You know, we really don't know what's behind the North Korean crisis of everything that could happen there with them having nuclear missiles. We really don't know. We think we do because we read some headlines. We know who Rocket Man is, but we really don't know what's going on. So I think it's part of our problem, you know. But what sells, sells. I mean, let's just be honest. What sells, sells. So the people that have to sell in television, that you guys are both part of it, and so am I. My school takes all the money. Everybody's going to – so if one and done sells, if talking about the guys going pro all the time, if that's what people want to hear, then I don't begrudge anybody for doing it. People got to pay the bills. But that's where it comes from. That's 100% where it comes from, guys. But when's the last time people are doing stories on a guy that graduated in 3 years and averaged 6 points a game at Stanford, but he's going to change the world with his knowledge and what he's going to do with his life. I mean, that story doesn't sell.
Well, you are preaching to the choir, brother, and I appreciate you saying that. I asked one time a couple guys at ESPN, I said, why so much Brett Favre? Like, why so much? Like, Brett Favre, this, Brett. They go, well, because we do studies on this, and that's what people want to hear about. I go, are you kidding
right
me?
Right on that, they do market studies. They know.
Yeah, they do. So that you're exactly right, and I know you're preaching to the choir to the two of us because it drives me nuts when I read a tweet or something where it says, these aren't student athletes. That just drives me nuts because in my world as a player, a coach, and a dad, the hell they're not. So I'm glad. You know,
I'll tell you one thing. You talk about not knowing a lot, but you know what Dockich's job, what he really wants the job? He wants to be the press secretary. You imagine Dockich standing up there and just.
I do.
I mean, Dan, press secretary, Dan Dockich. Dan, what is the president
thinking
about this?
You were talking about entertainment that would sell. That would sell.
people said, your dream job was Indiana coach. No, no. Press secretary. I don't even care who the president is. It don't matter to me, Republican, Democrat, Mick Cronin, Seth Greenberg. I just want to be your press secretary and go out there every day and tell them go to hell. That's what I want to do.
All right, last serious question, because you actually have a job in doctor. Yeah, Dan's got to wait till he expounds on the Colts and Major League Baseball and the playoffs and I don't know what else he's going to have on tap. But how good is Gary Clark? Because I don't think, like you talk about people that don't understand how good a dude is. Like, you've had good players. Now, he's a senior now. How good is how good is this dude?
Gary Clark is the ultimate plus guy. So, and here's how good a guy is. If you were to ask the coaches in our league if they could have one guy on their team, they would all take Gary Clark. And I know that because I talk to them all. Obviously, we have friends and we have a coaches, retreat and all that type of stuff with the conference. And everybody wants Gary Clark on their team because Gary Clark doesn't take a bad shot. Gary Clark is defensive player of the year. He's probably, if not one of the best rebounder in the league. Gary Clark finishes around the basket. He's now a guy who can knock down the 3-point shot. He's got an unbelievable attitude. He's the ultimate winner. And as coaches, you're all looking for that type of player. And that's what I tell my team, though, about, that pro teams are looking for that, too. Because everybody's not going to be the guy that gets 30 points. Being that type of guy is going to give Gary Clark a long career because he's a plus guy. He brings nothing negative to the table. And as a coach, you appreciate it. The stat sheet may not glorify it. The media may not glorify it at times, but people, the people that know the game, that coach the game, that played the game, that watch, they all love Gary Clark because the guy never does anything wrong. And the guys, the people that really know basketball, they see that.
I absolutely love the guy. I mean, I saw him as a freshman on down. He's fun.
Oh, yeah, he's a tremendous player. I mean, and he'll do anything to help his team win. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful person. I cannot tell you what type of guy this is, his backstory, his situation. He's a special, special human being. And everybody on our campus knows it. I mean, he's the type of guy, I'll give you a Gary Clark story, that somebody in our president's office stops me and says, hey, Gary Clark's a great guy. They were late. They were in a legal meeting. Their son was in our basketball camp. So Gary Clark, the kid told Gary, they're shooting around after camp. Gary's helping with camp. The kid, this is who my mom is. He says, oh, I know who that is. Well, she must be tied up, whatever. Gary Clark walks her son across our campus to our administrative building to take this kid to his mom because my mom's probably tied up at work, whatever. Now, I don't know how many, he didn't save the world there, but just how many people do that? I mean, how many college young people are pretty self-absorbed, with where they got to get to. They don't, as you guys know, they don't want to work your camp anyway. They don't even want to be there. But, most guys, you got to make them work the camp. Here's Gary. He's staying after the camp, shooting with kids and takes this kid. It's not an easy walk across campus to make sure that his mom's still there and everything's okay and deliver. She couldn't believe it. So I mean, he's just been an unbelievable ambassador for our program, and it's going to be sad to see him go.
That's great, man. That's great, Mick.
Well, Mick, have a great season, man. We look forward to seeing you. I mean, D-Square, you probably end up getting a little Bearcat action, right?
I hope so. I do. I like going there. I love it. I like watching the team play. I like the way you guys go about your business. No, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
So you're welcome. You're welcome in Cincinnati, because there are places you're not welcome, right? I mean,
yeah,
but Cincinnati
is day, too,
Cincinnati's
brother.
On the safe list, security limited.
Yeah,
Vizzo
Cincinnati's good, but
up there
I,
yet.
I wear my Cubs hat around, and then sometimes it causes angst. But we'll be all right. We'll be all right. We're taking Tybo classes, so we're ready to go this winter.
I love it.
The best. Thanks, Mick. You're the best, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
Right, Mick, man. You're awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.